This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2018, held at Faith Builders on July 31 to August 3.
Well, good morning. Welcome to class. Nice to have all of you here. One question that I kind of have for myself is, how does an individualized teacher teach a class, especially at Faith Builders? Anyway, only by the grace of God and His strength. As you already know, I am Janet Vance. I am a native of Seneca Rocks, West Virginia. And if you came to our area in certain seasons, you would conclude that I am a hillbilly, at times at least. Success in the individualized learning center, classroom, I think it said. By the way, is that fan bothering y'all? Can you hear okay back there? Okay. Your ears are younger than mine, so very good. I'll start out with a disclaimer. I'm glad it didn't say, yeah, feel free to come up. These young guys have the best seats here. I'll start out with a disclaimer. I'm glad the title didn't say failures or mistakes in the individualized classroom, because I have made my fair share of those over the years. And it's only by the help of God, the success that the Lord has given me, that I am able to do anything, have any success. And I'm sure that's true. You recognize that's true of all of us. I like the verse in Proverbs 22:6 that says, "For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding." Now, platinum blonde hair doesn't mean that I have all the answers. So I'm expecting you to give some good advice on what you do. And it's refreshing to learn from younger ones. My co-teachers are younger. They usually bring in a breath of fresh air, and I learn things from them. I have been blessed. Excuse me. I've been blessed to teach at North Fork Christian School for 41 years, all at our local school that serves two local churches. Mostly, I did sit out one term after like 20 couple years of teaching, and I worked for Christian Light Publications, mostly from home. And after about a year of that, it was, you know, so boring just to sit behind a desk and do stuff. You'd have to take walks for your recess. And so I was delighted to get back into the classroom again. One question I've been asked probably more than any other question, and it's just a normal, you know, conversation starter, are you still teaching? And sometimes it feels a little bit like, are you still teaching? Like it's a bit odd, you know, to make a career out of teaching or something. And probably it's not really meant that way, but sometimes you almost feel that way. And, but I know it maybe is different. Most young ladies teach a couple years and they get married and go on to something better, if that is better. I have family members, extended family members, that have made a career out of teaching in the public school system. My grandfather retired from the public school system. I have a nephew who is probably on his about 12th year in the public school system. Cousins who are retired from teaching. My first cousin can retire, but she doesn't know if she wants to. She teaches kindergarten at a local public school. And so in West Virginia, you just kind of make a career out of it. And so the Lord gave me the strength to keep on going. It's interesting, you know, I've taught like a lot of the people in our churches. The bishop in our church was one of my former students. The pastor's wife. All the school board were my former students. You like that one? And they still give me a contract. So I guess I wasn't too hard on them, or else they feel too sorry for me. I'm not sure. So anyway, I really didn't think, way back in actually in elementary school, I thought, you know, I want to be a teacher, maybe even in first grade, I'm not sure. And I had a cousin who was in my same class, and she wanted to be a teacher. And we decided that we were going to be single lady teachers. We didn't use that nice term for it, but that's what we decided we were going to be. And she made it until she was in her 40s, and then she got married and continued to teach. But the Lord planned for me to stick with it, so I've stuck it out. I really didn't think teaching was going to work out for me, because whenever I was around 14, my dad left home. He went to live with his secretary, and I had a strong loyalty to my mom, and I had 5 brothers. I was next to the oldest, and had some little brothers, and so I had a strong loyalty to stay with them, take care of them, get a job locally, and but God had another plan. Our churches decided, you know, it's time to have a Christian school. And they started in the fall of 1973, when I was a junior in high school. They just had grades 1 through 8. In the fall of 1974, they added high school, but I was a senior and I did not want to leave my friends in the public school system. And so I finished at our local public high school. But in that fall then, they asked me to be an assistant teacher. So I came right out of high school and then went into an assistant teaching program at our Christian school. By the next year, in the 1976-77 term, I was given a classroom of my own, and I taught with the famous John Swartz and Fred Miller. Fred taught grades 1 through 4. I had grades 5 through 8. John had the high school in the basement. There was like a thick curtain temple veil between Fred's class and my class. And of course you could hear pretty good back and forth. And John taught 7th and 8th grade Bible and math for me. But imagine starting out with 2 college grads. John had his master's in math. Fred had taught in the public school system. And but anyway, I naively said yes and began my career. John taught until, and Fred also, until about 1980, 81, I think, was their last year of teaching. And John was employed by Christian Light Publications in curriculum development. He worked from West Virginia. He was a pastor in one of our local churches. He was also on the school board a number of years, and was our acting principal for a number of years. And a lot of our success is due to John, because he, you know, he worked with individualized the curriculum. And so if you had a question, you could ask John. And I had some questions on the background information, and so I emailed John. He's now working in-house at Christian Light. And so I emailed him, and he sent me, I don't know how many websites you can look at, and I think he partly did it for a joke. Also, he sent me some information that I was looking for, and it was, some of this is what he sent me. In the early 70s, there was an explosion of small Christian schools, especially in the Baptist setting, due to Bible reading and prayer being taken out of the school, and also due to the immoral revolution of the 1960s. This affected Mennonites too, because more conservative Mennonites began breaking away from mainline line conferences and starting their own schools. It started an explosion of Christian schools, Christian day schools in the Mennonites. ACE was a Baptist organization. It was begun to help schools get a quick start with small staff and limited budget. Despite the strong Baptist theology, many Mennonite schools chose to go that route. And maybe some of you have even had CLE as you were growing up. Out of this came the request for Christian Light Publications to do something similar. In the late 70s, Alpha and Omega, publications began, and they started a curriculum, and they agreed that Christian Light could revise and use their curriculum at reasonable royalty rates. And their curriculum was less canned, and it was less objectionable too, as far as the influence of another denomination. So Christian Light quickly made the move to go ahead and buy royalties from them and began producing their curriculum. By the summer of that same summer, 1980, they were ready to go. The same summer that we took teachers training, our board had been thinking about going individualized, so we could have less teachers. And it's just a small school. So we went to visit an individualized school. It was in southern Pennsylvania. It was an ACE school run by Beachy Mennonites up there in southern PA. We walked in there and I found myself in the most boring classroom I had ever been in. Everything was really, really quiet. I was like, oh dear, as poor students, I would not want to be taught that way, because I was used to teaching. I had taught 4 years conventionally, and I had gone 12 years to public elementary high school, where we, of course, had conventional classroom. But anyway, everything was running smoothly. Everybody seemed to know what they were supposed to be doing, and it was kind of like a factory work. So we decided, yeah, that's okay. We can go for that. So then we went for training that summer, and we began the individualized approach then in the fall of 1980. Our classrooms were no longer classrooms. They were called learning centers. The desks became offices with dividers between. There were homework slips to give out. There were detention slips. There were special privileges that the students got for so much work done. They all had to have an 80% to pass on to the next light unit. Yeah, that's kind of how we had to follow their guidelines pretty closely that first year. I think we actually had to agree that we would go by their guidelines when we first signed up for 1 year at least. Going on to some advantages. We'll not talk a lot about the disadvantages. They don't have to worry about keeping up with faster students or waiting on the slow learners. One of the things that I read in the CLE pamphlet was, imagine two boys of the same age going out and being required to dig post holes. And they all had to dig the same amount. One was strong and one was weak. The stronger one could dig is really fast, and then he had to just wait until the weaker guy got his dug. He had to do the same amount. And so that was kind of their philosophy on going individualized. Another word they used for it was personalized. This came from Alpha and Omega. And so I like that sound better, individualized, personalized. And we've had to do tweaking and make it more user-friendly over the years. Also, if they are sick, they haven't missed out. And so they don't have a lot of work to make up on sick days. I used to feel like it was geared more to the average, above average student, but I've changed my mind on that. I feel like it's very helpful to the slow learners as well. It's an advantage to them. It's ideal, of course, for a small school with a wide range of grade levels. Oftentimes we have only one person in each grade level. This past year I had 7 students. I had 2 actually in 5th grade. 2 in 7th grade, 1 in 8th, 9th, and 12th grade. And so I'm not sure how I would have had classroom style for all of those grade levels. And so definitely it's an advantage. I feel like there's less discipline problems. I mean, who's going to be the wise guy piping up in class and making everybody laugh and disrupting things? And so I feel there's less room for bad attitudes whenever they're working on their own. John sent me some information from Dr. Wangert, who is a was a PhD and instrumental in helping Alpha and Omega get started. Some of his suggestions on advantages were the student has closer contact with the teacher, they learn to study, they learn how to learn, the initiative for education falls on them, it helps them to develop self-discipline, learning is more like real life situations. Some advantages from Patricia Lobenstein and her paper for a Master of Science degree says that there's no busy work. You know, you don't have to really worry about finding something for those fast learners to do. And it avoids useless repetition when it's not needed. And so those were some of the advantages. I don't really think our students would like to be in a classroom setting. Of course, they don't know a lot, the older ones especially, you know, have not really been in on class discussions much, but yeah, they would prefer individualized. Some disadvantages, of course, if you have a large school or maybe you have a class, maybe only one or two grades, maybe you have 10 in each grade level, and who wants to walk around to everybody's office explaining long division math to all 10 fourth graders? And so obviously conventional is a good way to learn. And it's not that one is better than the other. It just, whatever meets the need of your school, your students. Also, it is interesting. It was interesting for me for class discussions. But I sort of think that the average and above average students are really the ones who benefit the most from class discussions. They're connected with you and they're paying attention. The others, their minds are probably wondering, and they maybe they're lost because they don't know what you meant, and so you're not really reaching them necessarily in a discussion anyway. But I enjoy discussions. I remember pretty vividly in our history class in high school, this one, my history teacher, he also, I'm not sure if he was a coach at that particular time, probably was still helping football coaching. But he always opened up his class with current events. And so we would listen to the radio and read the newspaper. And if somebody hadn't had the time to do that, we would share news with them so that we had a lot of news so that we didn't have to really have class. Sports news, whatever. He was interested in that. So anyway, yeah, we liked class discussion. Our school was actually a mixture of conventional and individualized. Of course, the first grade, we had two this year. You can't give them a book and say, here, you read this and do your work. It has to be classroom taught. We had one second grader, one third grader. A number of their classes, especially reading, math, and language, were classroom taught, although it's still individualized because there was only one in that class. I think maybe a second and third did some, like maybe social studies, science, Bible on their own. Usually the teacher had to help them, though, studying for quizzes, tests, that type of thing. Usually if there's a couple in the same grade level, we try doing science experiments together. It's no fun to do an experiment one day with planting beans and the next day planting beans for a student who's coming along a day later or something, or next week, whatever. It's good to just combine their science experiments. Art class, of course. Music class, those are group classes. Also, I like to have creative writing. A number of years I've done this. Maybe instead of the writing in their language arts book, assign a topic for everybody to write on, and then they hand it in like in 3 weeks, and then you read it, and they seem to enjoy hearing it, at least, the other students' stories, and so that has definitely improved handwriting for our students. The curriculum, of course, I already mentioned we use Christian Light Education. We also use Abeka Biology apology, science, chemistry, which I think you can buy from Christian Life Publications. The old 700 social studies, it's probably you. It was probably back in your dark ages whenever we had that. Some of that was pretty terrible on philosophies and economics, whatever. And so I was allowed to bring in West Virginia history, which is taught in our public school systems for our eighth grade. And so I took a West Virginia history textbook and turned it into lessons, self-checks, tests. I individualized it so that that replaced the old 700 social studies. Christian Light also, of course, has done a lot of changing and making improvements over the years. Going on to teacher preparation. As in any teaching method, preparation is important, you know. You have to plan your day, follow a daily schedule. Maybe it's not the schedule you made up. Maybe the board or the faculty together made up one. Here's kind of what we do from 8 o'clock to 8:45, devotions. We try not to make our devotions too long. We don't want to preach a sermon every morning for them. Study time, then we have an hour and a half of study. And then we have a 15-minute break. We usually try to have some active game for them to play, hopefully be able to get outside. Then lunch is from 12 to 12:45. Lunch and a play period, of course. And then from 12:45 to 1 o'clock, we have story period. Try to choose interesting books that they enjoy, and I read story to them. Helps them to cool off from recess and get ready to go to work again. And then from 1 to 2:30, we have another study time. And from 2:30 to 3 is like final recess, phys ed. So that's our schedule. Back in when we had to follow the guidelines, that first year, especially for CLE, we had a 10-minute break every hour. That's what they suggested doing. And that was a little too much, too many breaks in between. So we changed that. And this has worked well for us for years. Getting ready for that first day also includes getting out their light units. Of course, before that, especially young teachers, they decorate the walls, put up bulletin boards, and after teaching for a long time, that hasn't become my first priority, usually anymore. And I remember teaching with a first-year teacher, and she brought in all this stuff, and it's like, when is she ever going to know what she needs to do? Get out those light units and study, or have them ready, you know. That's what we really need. But I didn't say anything, and she was ready. So we get out those light units, and we use the yearly progress report. I'm sure you can't see it very well from back there. Do any of you use CLE forms, materials? A number of you know what they're like. Okay. And so what I like to do is on that first week, like say I'm giving out Bible 501, then I'll say Bible 501. I'll just write it on the first week. This is something they actually showed us to do, and I like it. And then put the date. And maybe they finish that test on the fourth week. And so I draw a line from 501 to the test score. And I put 502 on that same on the fourth week. Now about 1 year I got the bright idea that, well, why do this? Why don't I just wait and until that fourth week whenever they take Bible 501 and write 501 in the score on the fourth week. Well, I came near the end of the school year, and especially for some of my high school students, it's like, do they have another book in that or not? And so this helps me, if I put the date issued and then draw the error for the score, helps me keep up knowing that, hey, they still have that book and they need to finish that book. Of course, there are these tests and quizzes that you put in the files. I like to have three files for each student. The first one, a thin file where I put tests that they need to take. The second file is tests that they have taken, and normally we do not send them home. We were taught to do that in training. Maybe if there's only one in the family or something, you know, I have sent it home so the mother, whoever could see this particular child lived with grandmother. But the logic was these tests are used year after year, and maybe younger siblings will get a hold of the test. And so that was why we keep their tests and then throw them away at the end of the year. So the second file is for those tests. The third file is folder is a little wider where I put books that they need to take, successive light units. It also involves planning for high school, and we issue three diplomas. The academic, you probably do the same in your school, academic, general, and vocational. This is the general. We require 21 credits. I think actually CLE has 22 now for that, but our board decided a number of years ago to go with 21. And so we have 16 that are required, and then they have 5 electives that they can choose from. I like them to do all of their required first, if they can. Like Bible, you know, they could stretch it out over 4 years and do like 5 a year if they really wanted to, but I don't like them to do that. I like them to get right in there, do the first 2 years in high school, do their Bible, their English, their literature. In elementary school, they had reading and language arts, so my logic is they can do English and literature at the same time. With 2 math, 2 science, 3 social studies. West Virginia is concerned that people are healthy, and so a state requirement is they have phys ed, health and first aid, so we have that. And also our school requires, they give like a 1/4 of credit a year in music, making a total of 1 credit. Now we do have students that graduate maybe in 10 years or 11 years instead of going all through 12. And so they may not be there for music the last couple years of school, so they're allowed to choose like another 1/2 credit elective and something else to replace the music, but they have to do these other required subjects. Another part of planning is taking those light units that have not been lessonized. And you know what I mean by that, the old Alpha and Omega that they haven't redone, not sunrised or lessonized. And I put stops in, or you probably do the same, put stops in for the lessons. I just make it lessonized. And if a book has like 48 pages and you want them to be done in 16 days, of course, you know, 48 divided by 16 is 3. And so you want them to do an average of 3 pages a day. And so that's a part of planning, getting ready. Also, reading, grades 6 through 8 only have 5 light units. And I don't like them to do a whole reading lesson a day. I like them to do 1/2 lessons for most of their work so they can stretch reading out throughout the year instead of getting finished reading the first semester. Fourth grade and fifth grade, they only have 5 Bible light units and they have 5 reading light units. So to make it a little easier for them, we do Bible the first semester, 5 Bible, and then 5 reading the second semester. That way they only have 5 subjects at a time that they're working on. Usually we have 180 days in a year. That's why I like them to finish their book every 17 days. Gives us a 10-day cushion for achievement tests, field trips, that type of thing, if we happen not to be in school. Preparation also involves taking, knowing the material. If a subject is a difficult one that you haven't studied or for a long time, at least, it might be a good idea to just work through that light unit on your own ahead of them. The first time I had students taking Spanish, I went through it was the old Alpha Omega Spanish series, and I went through 1 through 9 ahead of them so that I could help them whenever they got stuck. I didn't do number 10 because it was a review light unit. A few years ago, I labored over the old alpha and omega chemistry. I don't know if any of you ever have gone through the 1100 chemistry, old CLE stuff. Somebody's smiling over here. it was pretty difficult. It was kind of a nightmare. I had chemistry in high school, but I felt like it was not well explained, interestingly written. And so I labored over that. I prayed over it. I took it along bear hunting. I remember I had took a day off of school and I had a substitute. And I was sitting in my truck where I was supposed to be watching, and I had my ham radio on, listening for when the action got started. And I sat there and studied chemistry. I actually had the answer key with me. Sometimes you just simply had to look in the answer key, see what the answer was, and then figure out, oh, this is why. This is what it's all about. This is why. So I'm really glad the Lord giveth wisdom. One of those girls especially, well, they both struggled somewhat with it, but the one especially had a lot of questions. And they both were above average. And one of, she wanted to know why it's this way. Or maybe she couldn't understand it the first time I explained it, so I had to try to come at it from a different angle. Okay, maybe she'll understand it this way. And later she said that chemistry was her favorite subject. It definitely was not mine. Actually, we switched to apologia chemistry about halfway through the year. The reason they wanted CLE was because there were self-checks to study there for the final test. The test had more questions on. I think most of the apologia only has 15 questions. And so if you miss one, you have a 93 or somewhere around there. But they were concerned about having high scores, and they wanted more questions on their test. So I solved that problem by going through that half of apologia and writing study questions every day, more study questions, and writing longer tests. And so they were happy with that, and I was too. Algebra 2 and geometry also took a fair amount of going through ahead. I do know that science, like chemistry, has been written from scratch by James Gehring II from Christian Light. And so I think that has already been field tested, and I'm looking forward to using that next year if the board hires me again. Do you have any questions? I know it's like giving you a bunch of information. There's no PowerPoints or anything to help you much. So do you have any questions or some suggestions, maybe something to help me with planning or preparation before we get into the daily work? I have a ton of stuff, and I know we'll just skip part of it, but I would like to get through the part that applies to the individualized especially. Okay, for the going on then to the daily work, as you already know, the students are given goal charts, and they have improved these over the years, made them a little prettier, where they write down the lesson they're ready for that day. This is helpful to them as well as to the teacher's aide, because I actually had a seventh grader, and he would say, I'm not sure if I did this subject yet or not. He was a very smart student, but he would forget whether he had done his Bible yet or not. And so, you know, making sure he keeps up with that goal chart and he checks it off when he's done, that helped him to know, well, yeah, I've already done Bible. Okay, so then they're ready to go to work. They choose their own subject. I had a fifth grader who would oftentimes put up his flag and say, should I do language arts or social studies first? And I'm not sure why he asked me that, but his mother thought maybe he just wanted to talk to me or something. And so I would, just think a little bit. He's like, and of course, it made no difference. Oh, why don't you do language arts? Go ahead and do that or something. So he was satisfied usually. He would get busy. So mostly they decide on their own. They get started. They run into a problem and they raise their flag. They get that subject finished. Then they go and score. Sometimes if I am not real, very busy, or if it's a student that has trouble checking his own work, I will check the work for them. If it's a student that I know is a little slower worker and he's running a little bit behind the schedule that I know where he should be, I'll say, well, I'll check this. Sometimes he feels a little bit embarrassed about it, I think. I will check the work for them. So then they go back and make corrections. They recheck it. They circle the page. Even if it's a reading page, I like for them to circle it to show they have read that page. And definitely they circle their exercise pages, and then they lay them on the right side of my desk. This is to help keep me organized. Instead of keeping them, then as I have time, I can look through their light units, scanning for mistakes and punctuation, maybe even in word usage, leaving out a word or grammar, using the wrong word, spelling, underlining spelling words for most of them at least, sloppiness, that type of thing you look for, or maybe once in a while you look and see did they really check that right or not. And so if everything is right, acceptable, then I put it on the left side of my desk. And as I have time, then I'll hand it back out, or maybe another student will come along and say, I'll hand these out for you. And I'll hand them out, and then they also, I like another check put under that subject on their goal chart. Now, if there are things they needed to fix up, I'll lay that light unit open on the left side of my desk. And so, depending on where they are in their work, I might wait till they finish another subject and then take it back and give it to them to finish that one up. I like for them to make corrections the same day. That way they're fresh, ready to go, have a clean slate the next morning. To help me remember those light units that are open, I use a goal check report. I'm not sure if y'all have these or not. Actually, CLE does not carry them anymore, and we are allowed to make copies. Of course, you can use your own method, notebook, or whatever, but I like to you put their name, and it has all 5 days of the week, all the subjects listed under each day, and I put a mark on there, X or something, if they have to do corrections in that book. Even though it has just laid open on my desk, that saves me from forgetting which subject they need to make corrections in, because when those are handed out, sometimes a student will just close it, stick it in his desk. But if I see on my goal check that, hey, Johnny still needs to do corrections, then you can keep up with him better that way. At least I can. I also have a plan of action for what I feel is most important to do in my classroom at that particular time. The number one priority is trying to get quickly answer a question at the scoring station. If a student has a lot of questions, I'll say just write a question mark beside that number or circle the number and just lay it on my desk, and I'll check that for them. The next thing, of course, is answering flags, making sure that they understand their work. It might involve using a dry erase board to explain algebra to somebody right there at their desk. Just having a little mini lesson with them sometimes. Sometimes you realize that questions are not necessary, and I have a very honest student, and sometimes I'll say, did you look back for this? No. And so I say, well, you look back first. Also, there's questions that, like hunting, fishing, I've answered questions on that, like maybe what might be the best bass bait to use or something, that type of thing. Or maybe I'll say, well, it's right there, just look some more. It's pretty clearly there. And of course, as you've taught CLE, sometimes it's not very clearly there. And so you might say, well, it's on this half of the page, or it's in this paragraph. Or maybe it's right there. There's nothing wrong with giving them an answer. Classroom teachers do it all the time when they're up front. They're telling them what the answers are. Okay, so we have the flags answered. The third thing on my list would be self-check study papers, which I'll get to a little bit later. And then, as I have those checked, I'll look through the light units on the right side. It's my next priority. And lastly, if I have free time, then I'll go start checking tests, quizzes, getting out new books, putting up stars, that type of thing. Every 4 or 5 days, we have usually have like self-checks or quizzes, as you know. And reading and language arts have reminders of what they should study. Sometimes it's still a little difficult for them. They may still have trouble knowing, understanding it. So I'll say, well, you read down over it, and the ones you know, you put a check mark beside. The ones you don't know, then I'll come back and explain it to you. Math does not have any suggestions as to what to study. Maybe it is in the teacher's guide. I don't use the teacher's guide for my math. But anyway, so that's one of the most frequently asked questions in my classroom is, what do I study for this math quiz? What do I study for tests? Well, once upon a time, I was on the CLE math committee, and I suggested that they put just a little something there, you know, tell them to study that we remember is in such and such lessons or whatever. And there was one guy on the committee who felt like, we have reviewed this so well, they don't even need to study. And so I continually get asked, maybe by 7th or 8th grade, they might catch on that they just study the we remembers in the last 3 lessons before the test, before those quizzes. But I'm not sure how many teachers even know that. It might be in the teacher's guide, I don't know, but I continually have to keep answering that question, so you can see that I'm still ticked about that one. For Bible, science, and social studies, I leave the quizzes in the back of the book. We use those as self-checks. They get to study them ahead of time. Most of my students will take their self-check, they'll photocopy it, and they will write the answers down. Then they hand it in to me, and if I have time or another student, we will check their self-check to see if they have it, their answers right. This is their practice one. If they have them correct, if they have answers that are wrong, they need to correct it just like their work, and then study it, and then take their self-check without looking back. I do have a couple of students who like to study it in their head. And so they will study in their head till they think they know it, then they photocopy it, and then write it down. And if they have made a high enough score to please them and me, they don't have to write it in their light unit. We just save those self-checks, and they can study those study papers when it's time for them to study for their tests. Years ago, we just let everybody study in their head, and we were getting some pretty terrible scores on the self-checks. Of course, that was transferring into lower scores on tests. Sometimes a student likes for me to help him study even for a test, and so if it's a self-check, I'll have him read a self-check at a time, and then I'll ask him questions on that. I'll quiz him on vocabulary or Bible memory verses as I feel it's needed. Going into light unit grading, we do not do grades on daily work. That saves a lot of time from the get-go. 1980, starting with CLE, we have never done daily grades on their work. But we do, for those light units that have quizzes, reading, math, and language, we make them do their quiz without looking at it first, so they have to study. ahead of time without seeing what's going to be on there. There are two quizzes. We average those together. Of course, you get one score. We take that score and average it one time with a test. They made 94 on their quiz average. Of course, a 90 on their test average. That averages to a 92% book average. For self-checks, which they have been allowed to see, we just count those one-third of the grade. We average all three self-checks, get that score. We write their test score twice, use it twice. And so then we divide by three. And so the self-check is just one-third of the grade whenever they have studied it, seen it ahead of time. I'm not sure if you still require an 80% passing. I felt like that's almost dishonest. If somebody looks over your records, is it really true to life that every student can make an 80 or above in all their work? So they look at all the permanent records, everything is 80% or above. Well, our school board let us change that. They require, for a light unit grade, 75%. But that's, they have the quizzes averaged with that, self-checks are averaged with that, and I didn't have any problem with anybody passing. Most of our students make 90 or above, but anyway, so we use a 75% average. For the teacher that might, a few years ago that did everything, she had the lower grades and everything was classroom. They went to these kind of desks and they could pass with a 70. Which to me is a little bit backward. If you have a teacher helping you study, explaining what's going to be on the test, not everything, but reviewing everything plus, it should be easier for a student to pass than someone who studies on their own, was my logic. But anyway, it was 70% for them. And also, if we have a real slow learner that couldn't make 75, they may allow him to pass with a 70 as well. Going on to motivation, or maybe you have some questions before we go on. Okay.
How young do you have them begin to check their work?
Okay. It depends on their maturity level. We had second grader who did some of her own checking this year. I'm not sure any of the first grade did. I think our two first grade girls were really good, above average students, and they may have started checking their own, like science, social studies toward the end of the year. Okay, good question. Anything else?
Mm-hmm. You set all of their goals, or do they set any of their own?
They set their goals, but I make sure they set the right thing. Yeah. And we'll get into that just a little bit here later on how they know where they're supposed to be, so on.
Uh-huh. As far as the average thing, so you have the check with the self-check being a third, and then you have the test grade. What about the quiz? Like, is that the quiz and the test grade together?
For the ones that have, these also do have a self-check, right? Some of these. We don't use that final self-check in language. We do not use that score at all.
For math and?
Math, reading, or language.
Okay, so
well, math doesn't have one, but reading and language, that final self-check is not averaged at all.
So it's just the Bible, science, and social studies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. Good question.
Okay. Back to the checking thing. How much do you check up on the third and fourth graders, second, third, fourth grade? How accurately they're doing?
I think my co-teacher checked pretty carefully.
Like every day?
To make sure. I'm sure a few gets missed along the way, but as you check their goals every day, and so you can sometimes spot check and find out if that person is being honest or not. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure some have gotten away, probably.
Do you do punishments then if they're not checking very well? How do you correct that?
We have given detentions. say in at recess, make those corrections. You know, I'll check their book and maybe find a whole lot of things they need to fix. And so, yeah, they have to fix it up. Mm-hmm. Usually tell their parents as well.
You mentioned something about keeping the quizzes in the back of the book in some of the subjects.
Mm-hmm.
How do you keep them from looking back at the quiz before they take the quiz, or is that just...
Normally they tear it out then.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good question. They tear that out before they take it as a self-check, right.
Mm-hmm. You said your co-teacher let them pass at 70% to the next book.
For classroom.
Mm-hmm. So would you actually pass a first grader to second grade that's making 70?
We've had first graders repeat.
Okay.
Go back through if they, you know, if they just were not doing well. They've had repeat first grade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, going on to motivation. What about those people that just poke around? You know, just drive you crazy, get on your nerves, like, come on, speed up. I have a rule that they have to have one subject done before they go play first break. They have to have three done before lunch. They have to, normally I don't have to say this because they had it done, but they have to have four done before last break. But that way they don't have to take too much homework home. And so normally they do this. They're really conscientious about it, get it done. Some of them will even stay in on their own. I had a student that, you know, he just wasn't done by first break, and usually he chose math, and so it was a little longer subject, but still he could have been done. And so the bell rang, and so he sat there and just kept right on working. Or maybe sometimes at lunchtime, a student will say, I don't quite have three done. And I try to use common sense. Maybe they chose the three most difficult subjects, the ones that took the most time. Maybe they studied for a self-check and then had to take it. And so if they're close, I'll say, well, that's okay. They get to go. Also, I, you know, will go by their desk and try to speed them up a little bit. My one student that was a poker, he was good with mechanics, helped his dad in a mechanic shop. And so sometimes I would just go by his desk and say, I'm glad you're not working on my car today. And he would get the hint, and so he would get back to work. On the positive side, if they have three done before 10:15, then they may stop and go on a computer, library, play a game together. If it's close enough to recess, they can go outside and shoot baskets or something. I don't like them to get everything done before lunch, and so they need, if they have done three already, they deserve a break, and they get to go. Of course, if they have five of their six completed before lunchtime, they have another free time, and then whenever they're finished that last goal, in that last hour and a half study period, then they have more free time. Also, another method that I have used over the years is what I call the get ahead, stay ahead method. I'll take my attendance chart and like every 17 days mark, put a circle. That way I know which day they need to have that light unit done. This year actually we wrote on the calendar and they could look at it to see when light unit number two should be done, what date. And we went farther, we even put which lesson they should be on that day of the week. If you're not on lesson 12 and 603 social studies by today, then you're a day behind, whatever. And so some of them oftentimes finish a light unit before 17 days. Maybe they finish it in 15 days. And then when I issue the next light unit, I may, depending on who it is, that first year I used this method, I think I did it on every book, but I put a 2 at the top of that light unit. That means they're 2 days ahead. And maybe after 3 books, they might be 6 days ahead or even 8 days ahead. And this makes them feel really good about where they are. It gives them incentive to keep on working. If they're sick, of course they don't have homework. If they were extra tired that day. It's the end of the day, and well, I still don't have social studies done. Well, why don't you set that over for tomorrow, because you're like 12 days ahead. And so, yeah, that method has worked well for me as well. By the end of, near the end of this year, I had a fifth grader who was like 22 days ahead in social studies, going into his last light unit. And so I teased him a little bit. I said, you know, you could just do half a lesson a day and be finished this light unit before school's out. He said, I'm not going to though. And I said, I didn't think you would, good for you. So yeah, they actually, some of the students were done like maybe 2 weeks before school was out. And some of them got to go to work with their dad, maybe just came to school on special occasions or something. And so that's incentive to get done as well. Also have like a 7 high test score thing where I write on a chart their high test scores. And when we get so many, like maybe 70 for last year, we had 7 students, we go do something special. I try to make it easy enough, low enough, that 6 times a year at least we can go do something special. Also give money for high test scores. If they make 100, they get a quarter. If they make from 90 to 99, they get a dime. Most people make money. If they are a slower learner and not able to, then they can get a dime if their score is higher than the last book was, if it's improved. And so then I have junk there for them to buy, like candy, pop, pencils, erasers, little things that most of them really don't want to buy anymore. My older students save their money, usually, and some of them have it displayed on their desk. They turn those coins into bills and so on. And so then, and also they will share. They'll share with the younger class who does, they don't make the money like that. And so I'll have these younger students coming over to my junk box and they'll be buying things out of that. And so it's a good way for them to share with others. The slow learners, what can we do for them? Personalizing their work. Maybe have to delete a little bit of it. Nobody else needs to know. Sometimes it gets around, like so-and-so didn't have to do this. Or maybe changing those spelling words, taking an easier list, or getting spelling words from another company to help out with that. Or having a student helper, or if I have time, maybe read their work with them, like a paragraph at a time. Just have him in a class with him. Take him over to the library section of the classroom and use a chalkboard, dry erase board, and study with him, explain the lesson to him. CLE does have a list of light units that can be skipped for struggling students. We have Bible is their number one thing to leave out. So some students just have 5 subjects, they don't do Bible. Most of our students do everything, but there have been a time or so I've had a student skip light unit number 10. This is for the elementary. In high school, they have to complete all their work. And so, yeah, there are ways to compensate to help out the slower learners. We purchased the level 1 of It's All About Spelling this year to help our second grade girl. She has some dyslexia when it comes to spelling. She's a good reader, and she could learn to spell for the spelling words. They were hard, but whenever it came time to, whenever she wrote stories or when she wrote in her light unit, she was misspelling words pretty terribly. It was pretty obvious that she has some dyslexia. And so this has magnetic tiles, a magnetic board where they use a hands-on and spell their words and pick out the letters for sounds, and it also improved her daily work. And that's the goal of spelling. I have student helpers. We have a program where high school students can earn up to 2 electives, 2 of their 5, taking a student teaching program. And this has been very valuable to our school. Most of my high school students take the student teaching program, partly because there's no tests and quizzes to take. But they seem to enjoy it, and I enjoy working with them, and it's very helpful. Our school board would have had to hire aides many times if it wasn't for that. We've had really good helpers, and they can go on, and it gives them experience. I have a number of students that are teachers. My co-teacher last 2 years, and my co-teacher this year, they are hiring an aide. The aide all were former students who went through the student teaching program, so that's been a real blessing to our school. So they can help with a struggling student, and they can go through some of those light units on the right side of my desk. They give out the ones on the left side of my desk, and so it's very valuable. It gives me a little, if not much is going on, and I'll just leave them for a little bit and let them answer flags, and I'll take a restroom break or something. And so it's very nice to have them. And guess what? Sometimes they even teach a class conventionally. My high school senior last year was really good with music, and so I turned my music class over to Aaron. He has a really good ear. He's very talented, a better ear than I have in music. And I gave him a list of objectives of what I wanted them to learn. And he did well. We had a winter program, and I picked out the songs and verses for that program, and he prepared our little octet for the program. I helped sing, but he was like on one end and I was on the other, and he started the songs and was our like little mini director, and it was great. You know, it was, although you're still up front and it's maybe a little nervous, but it was less stress-free for me to just let him do it. And how can you get anybody to sing better than having the most popular boy in school pushing them? Yes, you need to sing a little louder. And it was great. He also taught phys ed the year before last for me. He was a great athlete. He enjoyed doing that up to a certain point. Sometimes the students would maybe tell him they wanted a different game or something a little more than they would me. And so he didn't enjoy that part, but he was a very patient teacher, excellent player. So it's been a blessing in our school. Any questions on slow learners or student helpers? I guess if you want to find out about extracurricular activities we do, recess, that's pretty much conventional. In your classroom, you can plan that as well. Relationships with students, that's pretty universal as well. Maybe a couple things I might mention on that. Make sure they know that you love them. This goes a long way in solving behavior and attitude problems. And if they were really bad one day, whatever, make sure they know you don't hold that against them the next day. If you're wrong, apologize, because they know it anyway, usually. And it helps them to respect you even more for that. It helps them to forgive you. I remember a student I very seldom have had to deal out corporal punishment, but there was one particular incident a number of years ago where the student just wanted to argue that he had not done what I knew he had done. And so the punishment turned into corporal punishment because of his not willing to accept his misbehavior. And I did it pretty quickly. I was kind of mad. And I felt smitten right away. And the boy did not seem broken. He didn't cry. I guess I didn't smack him hard enough. I like to make sure they feel it and they know it. But anyway, right away I said, "I'm sorry, I didn't do that right." And then he broke down. He started crying. He said, "It was not you, it was me," he said. And that was a blessing. If I hadn't asked him, told him I was sorry, apologized, I don't think I would have broken that boy. Do special things with them as they get into the upper levels, especially seniors. They get to choose whether they go hunting with me or shopping with me. Of course, the girls normally choose shopping and the guys usually choose hunting. And my favorite one is hunting, of course. In fact, and I've wondered different times why God put me in a family where my mom needed so much help. I have five brothers, and I'm the only girl. And so I've kind of concluded that maybe it's so that you can relate to the boys in your classroom. So. A little bit on the super sensitive, or a child who is struggling with that. I've had some that maybe it takes them longer to read the page because they're afraid they're going to miss a word, and they're afraid if they circle that page, they're going to be telling a lie. And so sometimes I'll say, it's okay if you don't read every word on that page. Go ahead and circle it anyway. Or it's okay if you don't use your neatest handwriting. Maybe they'll try to write their neatest because they feel they're not pleasing to God if they're not giving their best. And so maybe by the end of the day, there's only three light units done or something. And so you don't have to write your neatest, just use good handwriting. That type of thing. One time I had a high school student who was pretty obviously he was under some real stress. I'm not sure what it all was about. Some of it was mostly spiritually related, I think. Worried that he wasn't right with God. And I noticed he was starting to make these weird motions at his desk, kind of like trying to get the thought out of his head or something. And so I would quietly go by his desk and lay B complex on his desk. And later when he got out of school and got a job, sometimes he would buy B complex from me. And so be aware, watch for those super sensitive ones. Oh, one thing I really should mention on these slow learner things, don't use that CLE method where you give gold stars for hundreds, blue for 95 to 99. Now, a student who is slow feels bad already. And I'm not sure why they still have that. It's still in the order for them, gold stars for such and such. Well, what we do is we give red stars for Bible, blue for language arts, and so on down the line. We just color code our stars. We do not do that. Because you can walk by their desk and say, oh, you made 100 in Bible. Well, this guy only made like an 80 in Bible. And so there's no use to advertise their grades on their achievement charts. Okay. I also have a picture here of one of our outings that we took for special high schoolers and stuff. One of my favorite ones up on our mountain in front of a hunting blind. And if you have any questions through the year, I should have put my email address. Even though I'm from West Virginia, I do have email, although I didn't use PowerPoint. So feel free to email with questions. And if you would like, this is still in the rough, but I can write it all down, type and go in my computer and add it, and I will email this thing to you if you would like that. Just let me know.
Can you just write your email on the board here?
Actually, I think it's on the hand. Everybody that is here will get a copy of everybody's email who's here. So it should be on that. So now you've heard a lot about our classroom, our school successes we've had. I'm sure you're having successes too. And if God gives you 36 more years of teaching or 45 years of teaching, go for it. It's fun. I don't have anything more fun to do. Also, I like a verse in Jeremiah 29:11. A grandmother of some of my students gave me a magnet. I'm not even sure what version it is. It's definitely not King James. But it says, I know the plans I have for you, plans to give you a hope and a future. And that's what God has done for me. And he'll do the same for you. So have a great year. God bless you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.